Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Smart Talks by the Elizabeth Smart Foundation. I'm Elizabeth Smart, and I'm here with my co-host, Mio Strong, and I'm going to turn the time over to her today to introduce our guests.
Hello, everybody. Today, we are so lucky to be joined by two incredible women. Jesse Richards and Brooke Muir are from the company or the nonprofit Fight Against Domestic Violence, or FADV. Jesse is the co-founder and currently the advisory director, and Brooke is the executive director currently. So thank you, ladies, for joining us today. I think, Jesse, since you have the co-founder title, I'm just going to throw it to you to start and just get a little bit of history about FADV from you.
Sure. Thanks so much for having us. We are just delighted to be here and honored. We started FADV about 3 years ago, and our whole mission is to fundraise to support survivors of domestic violence and to support the service providers who do that work in the state of Utah and then also across the country. So domestic violence is pretty underfunded. Intimate partner violence is a pretty underfunded cause. And so we wanted to be a fundraising organization that could help disperse unrestricted crisis cash grants to shelters and service providers. And then we also have another program that Brooke would be more appropriate to talk about, but our Housing First program, where we help raise money to help get survivors into safe and stable housing. That's one of the biggest issues, particularly in Utah, is finding affordable, safe housing. So that's the work that we do. I am a professor at the University of Utah, also in the business school, so that's kind of my primary job. And for the past 10, 15 years, I've been doing research on violence and gender and language as it exists in organizational contexts. So that's kind of where all this came from. I decided I wanted to put my research work into a more practical application, kind of outside of the university. And that's where we started FADV.
I don't mind asking. I mean, there are, I mean, I have, you know, met and spoken with and worked with so many nonprofits over the years. Was there ever a reason that drove you towards domestic violence and researching it and realizing how underfunded was it? I mean, have you ever experienced it yourself, or did you have someone that you know? Sorry to jump right in and be super personal. If you don't want to answer, that's okay.
No, this is, my husband says I ruin every party because I jump right into like the nitty gritty of society. So I've been doing the research for a long time. I've always had a passion for kind of underrepresented communities. So I was already doing that research, and then a close friend, mentor, and colleague, actually the woman who was the chair of my dissertation committee, was shot by her husband about 1 month before I was set to defend my dissertation. So it was a huge shock for me. She had been reading my work, and she is... also a scholar and had done a whole bunch of research on domestic violence. And the fact that I was so close with her and didn't know she was in that situation was really jarring for me. And she's on our board now. She's on the board of our foundation. And the talks that I've had with her since then, she and I both have been like, we need to take the research that we've been doing, and she wanted to take her personal experience and I wanted to take my personal experience and see how we could translate that to a larger audience. The fact that I didn't know she was going through that, the fact that she didn't feel like she could confide in me, like all of those sort of shame and trauma that plays into the secrecy that makes this continue to be a problem in our society, I think sort of came to the forefront when this happened. Kind of what compelled everything.
I mean, I feel like you hit the nail on the head right there with this idea of guilt and shame and secrecy. I mean, I think you find that across so much of the abuse that goes on. I mean, domestic abuse. And then, I mean, even abuse that I went through. I mean, no one okay, there are always a few like crazy people out there who would be like, yeah, you wanted it. Yeah, you ran away. But anyone who I think knows my story or knows me would never be like, well, it's your fault it happened. Like, why are you embarrassed? You have nothing to be ashamed of. You have nothing to be embarrassed of. I mean, you were kidnapped out of your home in the middle of the night. Like, I don't know how much more of an innocent situation that could have come from. But even for me, I mean, after I was rescued and I came home, I mean, I did not want to talk to anyone about what happened, because even though I knew it wasn't my fault, I was still so embarrassed. And I felt like not guilt that it happened, but just embarrassed and shameful that something had happened to me, that I had let something happen to me, when the truth is, no person, whether it's domestic violence or sexual violence or any other kind of violence, wakes up and thinks, yeah, I'm going to let that happen to me. I would love to be raped. I would love to be shot. I would love to be beaten to death or within an inch of my life from my partner who's supposed to love and protect me. I mean, nobody wakes up and thinks that.
No. And I mean, you're exactly right. All that trauma and that guilt, I think our society sort of increases that, particularly for women. So even though someone might say, of course, that's not your fault, I think a lot of us have been socialized to kind of internalize that anyway. And then if you layer on top, so sexual violence is a part of intimate partner violence. It's very prevalent as one of the pieces of domestic violence. But if you layer on top of that, the fact, like you said, that it's someone you chose to marry who you love, and quite possibly could still love even in the midst of abuse, there's an additional layer of guilt and shame on top of that, because you're thinking, why do I love this person when he's hurting me? So there's so many complex emotions that go into this. There's never a simple answer, and blaming the victim is never the right response, because it's just too complicated for any of that.
Yeah, I think one of the common themes we've seen is that all walks of life, and the fact that your professor was highly educated and specifically in this, even in this area of expertise. And I can't imagine her own internal dialogue, wanting to keep it quiet or wanting to, I mean, my heart goes out to her. Like, I'm so glad you guys have taken this tragedy. Both of you have just, all of you, everybody involved has taken it and moved forward in such a positive manner. And it's one of the most inspiring things, I think, is when advocates come forward and make positive waves. Talk to me, Brooke, about the housing project that she just brought up. Tell me more about that. That's new.
So the housing project is, like you said, we really want to focus on fundraising and filling those gaps. I think as we're talking about the shame and the secrecy and all that has surrounded it, and it's a subject that a lot of people are uncomfortable talking about, I think that really contributes to why service providers do not have the funding that they have. It's a hard thing to fundraise for. And so in some looking at the gaps that they are facing, housing is such a key to helping women. I'll say women, but anyone can be a victim of intimate partner violence. But the majority are women. Giving them an opportunity to break that cycle and be able to move forward and really progress with their lives and make this not a permanent situation. And on average, it takes 7 attempts for a victim to leave before they're actually able to stay away from that relationship. And so one key component of that is a lot of them have no place to go. They don't have the resources. They don't have a roof over their heads. And so oftentimes they go back to that situation, because if you are faced with homelessness or going into an unhealthy relationship, especially if you have children, you're going to pick the roof over your head. Over 60% of homeless women also are victims of intimate partner violence. And over 80% of women with children experiencing homelessness are victims of intimate partner violence.
Wow, so 80%?
Over 80% of women that are homeless with children. So that is kind of the key factor that we thought can help women move forward and find a way to move on. And so,
are they nationwide, or are they specifically to Utah?
The over 80% is nationwide. That was a national survey.
Wow.
And the 60, the interesting thing is that a lot of those statistics are pretty similar across the states. So you're similarly going to find anywhere between the upper 50s to mid 60% range on the just women in general and homelessness. So, you know, if a woman reaches out to a service provider, and we have incredible service providers across the country that are trying to help with what they can, and they may be able to qualify for housing assistance. But a lot of that, most all of that federal housing assistance will help them with the monthly payment, but it does not help them with the security deposit or any sort of application fees. There are all of these gaps that are really the biggest barriers, because their rental apartment might be $600 or $700 a month, but that security deposit is going to be over $1,000. That is a hurdle that they simply cannot get over. And so that's where we try to come in, and service providers, when they are working with a survivor, and they will refer them to us to see if we can help them with those hurdles, those security deposits, application fees. A lot of the times there's back utilities. There's all these little stumbling blocks that prevent women from getting into safe and stable housing.
Wow. And I mean, how has this campaign been going so far? I mean, have you seen success with it? I mean, once people understand, I mean, how prevalent it is, and to think that over 80% of women with children who are homeless have experienced domestic violence. I mean, that's a pretty staggering statistic right there. I mean, do you find that people are giving and that they want to support what you're doing and they want to help out where they can, or is it still kind of like out of sight, out of mind?
I think people are still, you know, it's still an issue that we are working on. But I think when you hear the incredible stories and the positive impact that it has on them, we just started piloting this program. And believe me, the demand for the need is far outweighs, you know, this pilot, but it's so exciting. Just the initial interactions that we've had. I had one applicant, she came and picked up her security deposit check because it goes directly to the rental agency. And she just fell into my arms in tears because she's like, I've got 5 children. We're moving into this. We've changed schools. He doesn't know where I'm going. This means so much. And I finally have an opportunity to keep my family safe. So if that isn't motivating enough, I don't know what is.
Wow. So, I mean, they come directly to you. They apply for assistance directly to you, and then they come and pick up the check in person.
Well, that one was a unique case. With intimate partner violence, it is such a potentially deadly and lethal thing. We keep as much anonymity as possible. She chose to come pick up that check directly so that she can get it. But oftentimes it's done really, we try to collect, keep the information completely confidential. So we try to cut the check directly to the renter and always so that they don't have to do that. They don't have to put themselves in that position, but she felt she was safe enough to do that.
Wow. So. And if it's not too nosy of me to ask, I mean, I know you said this is just barely beginning. This is just barely starting, but how many women have you been able to help so far, or survivors, perhaps I should say?
So we just started it in January, and we've helped about the Housing First program just started in January. We've been able to help about 7 or 8 women. The potential there is just in talking with the service providers here and shelters. When we can really build up this program and funding, I mean, they could give us 10 to 20 women a month.
Wow.
That is what the demand is. And that was just between two or three shelters here within Salt Lake City.
That is huge. So to really get this up and going, I mean, to really make it a reality, I mean, like, what do you need?
We need financial support. So we need funding, because it's really, I think it's a really, it's key to getting women to move on. So funding is what we're doing. That kind of leads me into our campaign that we have going. So as with COVID-19, shelters, I mean, it's a pandemic on top of a pandemic. So now you've got people with who are in unsafe relationships that are, in order to protect our entire community, they have to stay home like the rest of us in our quarantine with their abuser. And so rates have skyrocketed, not just across the US, but across the world. There are headlines all over Italy, France, the Middle East. It's just bloomed. So, and nonprofits have taken a hit. We had to cancel a campaign right in the middle of March, right when everything shut down. And the ability to campaign is changed. But the wonderful giving tools.
All about that.
Yeah, we know all about that. That is actually how we connected, was when you announced your Smart Defense program. I was so excited. In college, I was a ballerina growing up, and then in college I was done. And I was looking for another outlet, and I took Taekwondo and loved it so much. And it was incredibly empowering, and to have the knowledge of just little things of what to do if you're in a dangerous situation, I thought, well, we've got to connect. So
I'm being modest. She actually has a black belt.
Awesome.
Here's the thing. I don't really say that anymore, because as Mia well knows, you gotta practice those things. You gotta keep it up.
Yeah, right. But still own it. You earned it. That's awesome, Brooke. And I can't wait to have you guys come and, you know, join us once we're able to physically be in person.
I was really excited. And so when that kind of got shut down, I really appreciate the opportunity to be on this podcast. But the wonderful organization Giving Tuesday, mm-hmm. It's usually the following Tuesday after Black Friday. They have put together an international campaign where any nonprofit can join in. And so our campaign for Giving Tuesday on May 5th, which is 1 week from today, Tuesday, we are doing a 555 for FADV. On May 5th, we're asking you to donate $5 to and tag 5 friends. So $5 it's a small, hopefully doable amount that if it spreads like wildfire, we can make a huge difference. And that can go towards our crisis cash program, which helps with shelter stay, transportation, food, toiletries, all the things that you absolutely need in crisis, and our Housing First program. So we are really hopeful and excited that we can really raise funds for that.
So you guys, as you're listening to Smart Talks today, their Instagram handle is FADV_fightviolence. And you can find them on Facebook as well. Is it the same handle, or is it just FADV.org on Facebook? And so tag 5 friends. I know I'll be doing it. We'll be doing it from the foundation's page.
Thank you.
Yes.
We find it so easy to take your money. We are on Venmo. Venmo's always easy.
I love Venmo.
I love Venmo. We're on Venmo. We're on PayPal, our website, Facebook. We are really easy to give to.
And I mean, just to like throw everything out there, I know everyone is stressed right now. I mean, circumstances have changed for all of us. I mean, they've changed for me. I'm like perched on a metal chair in with like laundry baskets stacked up and my laptop in front of me. I mean, everything has changed. But you think $5, that's really not a lot. I mean, what is it, like a combo meal at McDonald's, or, you know, a Starbucks coffee, or I don't know, like, I was going to say a roll of toilet paper, because they might actually be that much.
They might actually be $5.
But it's really not that much. And so if you're able to give more, then give more. If you can't, $5, that's going to go a long ways. This is going to help so many people. So definitely join into this campaign 555. I mean, it's an incredible organization. I mean, I'm just sitting here loving talking to them, listening to what they're doing, listening to how they're helping, and not even just in Utah, but really nationwide. I mean, as a nonprofit ourselves, like Neo and I both know the importance of unrestricted funding, and to be able to offer those grants to these shelters is huge. I mean, I can only imagine how much these other nonprofit shelters feel about the help that you're giving them and you're supporting them with. So if you find that you've got, you know, an extra Happy Meal you can donate, then do it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Can I tell you a quick story about the Crisis Cash?
Please do.
So this will just give you a sense of how far $5 can go. But as you said, having unrestricted funds is a whole different ballgame, because typically for people who aren't familiar with fundraising or grants or giving, most grants are earmarked in some way. So for example, the YWCA downtown, which is our state's largest service provider for women and children and families, if they get grants from the federal government, they're earmarked for something. If they get grants from the state, they're earmarked for something. And so our whole goal was to give unrestricted crisis cash. Like, you use this how you think it needs to be used. And part of the reason we came up with that is the YWCA over Thanksgiving last year. Brooke, is that right?
It would have been a year and a half ago now.
A little over a year. Okay, so a couple of years ago. Had a woman come in with her two boys, and it was Thanksgiving weekend, and so none of the C-level staff was there. It was just like the intake and the crisis counselor. And this woman said, I have a place to stay with my sister in another state. She said I could come. My husband's gone, so we're free to go, but we can't get there. And the staff was like, well, we can get you a bus ticket, but they didn't have anyone there to sign off on the purchase. And so the staff there, because it was Thanksgiving Day, kind of pooled the cash that they had and bought this woman and her two sons a bus ticket to a couple states away, to another state. And then, you know, after the weekend, they were reimbursed. But it's those kinds of situations that if money isn't earmarked for a specific situation, it's really hard to use it. And so we wanted them to have this pool of crisis cash that they could say, this is a need. We feel great about funding it. Here you go. Here's your bus pass, or whatever someone else needed to get them into the safe place.
Oh, I love that. And just for our listeners, do you guys have maybe some quick tips or recommendations if you are in need currently in COVID, or if you know somebody that you think might be in need? Are there ways we can immediately help?
So service providers are still doing their jobs and working remotely for counselors and other services. Most shelters are still open. Nationally, we always tell everyone, it's an easy number to memorize, 1-800-799-SAFE. That's the national hotline, works 24/7. And then here in the state of Utah, there's the 1-800-897-LINK line, and that's the state's Utah Domestic Violence Coalition. So there are still service providers available and there to help.
And they've actually set up several online services, so you can file for a protective order online, which I think you couldn't do previously. We can send you that link and you can share it. Brooke has a graphic, I think, that you could share if you wanted to, but the state is trying to adapt to the pandemic and trying to help people get more resources digitally. But
well, I think it's good to remember that seven times trying to leave before they can be necessarily successful in that. I had a best friend in college that, I don't know if it was seven times, but it was pretty close. And just to know that, just be patient, believe them, support them, love them, and hang in there. Like, and just keep checking on them. Just keep offering whatever you can and help spread the resources, the phone numbers, the hotlines. There's so much out there that we have to offer to help people in this situation. So just keep going, keep trying, keep believing, keep supporting, and be patient.
Be patient. And if you follow us on social media, we're always posting tips and resources that you can find.
Okay. That's perfect. So for everyone listening, make sure next Tuesday, Giving Tuesday, 555, let's all support $5 and let's all donate $5 and support FADV and tag 5 friends on May 5th. And also, if you feel like you have been a victim, if you feel like you are a victim, just because we're all in lockdown right now doesn't mean that there aren't resources still available to you. So if you are scared being at home with a partner, if you are being beaten, if you are being hurt, if you're feeling like maybe your relationship is questionable, then there are resources. Make sure you contact them. I mean, contact the YWCA. Call 911 if your life is endangered. Don't be afraid to call. I mean,
and if you are hearing something, now that we're all trapped in apartments or whatever, if you are hearing something, say something. If you know something is going on, call 911.
Yes, she said it. I've said it. Make sure we all do it now, because at the very worst thing that can happen is that you're right. That's the worst thing that can happen. But what a miracle it is that you called it in, because you could have potentially saved someone or some child's life. So let's not turn a blind eye to this. Let's all keep our eyes open. Let's all be responsible citizens and, I mean, responsible human beings. I mean, we can all do better. So with that being said, I just want to say thank you so much to both of you. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you both on. I will definitely be doing 555 on next Tuesday, and I hope everybody else does too.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. We'll see everyone again next time. Bye-bye.